honorable members and the delegation from the department, we have only one item on our agenda today. That is the presentation of the strategic plan and annual performance plan by the Department of Defense and Military Veterans. And then we hope this will also assist us in the workshop that we are going to hold about our oversight as the portfolio committee. And if we can listen very well and pick up issues that could also impact on our oversight role, it will do us a very good favor. Gigi, you are going to make a presentation, I guess, and if you can go straight into the business.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. I have with me the team from the Department of Military Veterans, the senior management from the Department of Military Veterans. Some you may be familiar with, but most not, because this is our first engagement since we have been established to table before you the strategic plan as well as the annual performance plan. I'll start to my right and go straight down to the left. To my right is Rantla, Mabel Rantla, which you are familiar with. She is the Deputy Director General of Socioeconomic Support and Services in the Department of Military Veterans. And immediate left is Ms. Nonko Zomulai, who is the Deputy Director General Military Veterans Empowerment and Stakeholder Management. And next to her is Major General Feni Make, who is the Deputy Director General of Corporate Services in the Department of Military Veterans. And then to move straight further on, Ms. Olisa Murolo, who is the Chief Director Healthcare and Wellbeing, Military Veterans Healthcare and Wellbeing. And next to her, it's Mr. Chimomola, who is the Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Military Veterans. And next to him, Mr. Mukwena, who is the Chief Director of Research in the Department of Military Veterans. And behind me is Mr. Pondi Jali, who is the Chief Director of Military Veterans Database Management and Beneficiary Support, Military Veterans Beneficiary Support. So that is the team as we have it, and those are the faces you will put to the structure as we will see it when we go through the presentation later. Chairperson, the presentation and the strategic plan and the APP were duly tabled before you in accordance with the prescripts and the parliamentary protocols, as signed off also by the Deputy Minister of Defence and Military Veterans, Honourable Thabang Makwetla, as well as the Minister of Defence and Military Veterans, Honourable Lindiwe Sisulu. The scope of our presentation will cover the aim as well as the vision and the mission, and then look at the functional structure of the Department of Military Veterans, and then also our strategy map informed by the overall government outcomes, and then furthermore the executive authority priorities, and then strategic budgeting information, and then conclude. I have noted on the program that we have until 11:30 to present. We will try and fit within the time or the minutes as allocated on the program. Chair, on the aim of our presentation is to provide the outlook of the strategic planning instruments, those being the strategic plan of the Department of Military Veterans for 2012 to 2016, and then also the Military Veterans Annual Performance Plan for the fiscal year 2012, that is the in-year starting 1st of April 2012 up to 31st of March 2013, the end of the financial year. And those are what has been submitted. In terms of our vision and mission, as already approved by the executive authorities, the vision of the Department of Military Veterans is a dignified, empowered, and self-sufficient military veterans community. And our mission is to facilitate, deliver, and coordinate all activities that recognize and entrench the restoration of dignity and appreciation of the contribution of military veterans to our freedom and nation building. Now, in terms of the structure of the Department of Military Veterans, as you see there on slide number 5, at the top is the ministry comprising the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, and then the Deputy Minister of Defense and Military Veterans. And then the two boxes on the left and the right, seen at the level of the ministry, are respectively the Advisory Council on Military Veterans, and then on the right, the Military Veterans Appeals Board. Those two structures are structures that are appointed by the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, respectively. And then going away from the ministry and into the department, the Director General of the Department of Military Veterans, and then the inner office of the Director General, that is the Directorate Office of the Director General, and then a Directorate Internal Audit. And then further than out of the office of the accounting officer, the three branches of the Department of Military Veterans, which are that Military Veterans Socioeconomic Support Services, and then also the that is headed by Mr. Ranta, as indicated in the introduction, and then the branch on Military Veterans Empowerment and Stakeholder Relations, that is headed by Ms. Nonkonzo Mulai, as already introduced, and then the branch corporate services headed by Mr. General Lefenimak, also introduced. To break down the structure of the three different branches, without going into the last person or post within the structure, just to pick on the Chief Directorate. Chief Directorate, Research and Policy Development in the Socioeconomic Support Services, also introduced, and then the Chief Directorate, Military Veterans, Health Care and Wellbeing Support, Ms. Morolo, and then the Chief Directorate, Military Veterans Beneficiary Support Services, that includes the database management, that is Ms. Gondi Jali, and then the Chief Directorate, Military Veterans Socioeconomic Support Management, that is yet to be filled. And then coming to the branch on the empowerment and stakeholder relations, the Chief Directorate Provincial Office Management and Stakeholder Relations, and then the officer responsible for that is OFSIC, is not with us today. And then on the Chief Directorate Heritage, Memorials, Burials and Honors, as well as the Chief Directorate, Military Veterans Skills Development and Empowerment Program. All of those two are in the process of being filled as we speak. On the branch corporate services, the Chief Directorate, Strategic Support, that is Field Advocate Nzaloba, and then the Chief Directorate Financial Management, Mr. Chimomola, who's here with us, and then Directorate Human Resource Management, that is not yet Field, is in process, and then Legal, which is not reflected there, Directorate Legal Service. In terms of our strategy map, and as indicated earlier, this is a strategy map in terms of the overall government outcomes. We said that the vision of the Department of Military Veterans is a dignified, unified, empowered and self-sufficient military veterans community, and that is the outcome and the impact. In terms of our deliverables then, deliverable one, strategic direction two, socio-economic support services three, empowerment and stakeholder relations management services, and four, ensuring the provision of a sound policy and administration. And on activities, in terms of the programs administered by the Department of Military Veterans, and then enabling the Department of Military Veterans and then delivering the services. The input with respect to all of that are ensuring a professional and a supportive military veterans human resources base, and then also ensuring a sound financial management of the military veterans department, and then ensuring adequate military veterans infrastructure, estate management and logistics services, and then ensuring integrated and reliable military veterans information and intelligence, including the database. In terms of the future, ensuring that there is appropriate research and policy capability, promoting a global presence, and then ensuring consensus on issues of military veterans nationally and internationally, and an adequate footprint of the Department of Military Veterans. Just briefly on the types of evaluation related to the questions around this model, and those, as already indicated, speak to what is the impact, what are the outcomes we seek to achieve, what are the outputs, what activities inform those, as well as what are the inputs. And then on the evaluation, economic evaluation, what are the cost benefits of the programs and activities we engage in, impact evaluation, whether the interventions that we have put in place or seek to put in place have an impact on the outcome and impact level, and then implementation evaluation, speaking to monitoring and evaluation, and then the underlying situation as well as design evaluation as well. Now, getting into the executive authorities' strategic priorities, these strategic priorities, although we have put them as they are, it does not mean that in the implementation thereof we'll do it sequentially, but they are all priorities that should be addressed. Just to highlight the provision of immediate social relief of distress to the most vulnerable of the military veterans, and that is on page 16 of the annual performance plan, and we have actually even highlighted that in red. And within that is with respect to acknowledging that there are destitute military veterans and the need to immediately identify them and take immediate actions of intervention so that we deliver immediate relief. And this is a top priority as we start this financial year. Secondly, providing, subject to availability of resources, comprehensive support services to military veterans, and where applicable in accordance with the law, their dependents, but not limited to those specific areas, universal access to health support, that is one of the top areas in that Section 5.1 of the Military Veterans Act. It actually placed at the top as well. Honoring and memorializing military veterans, then education, training and skills development, and then facilitation of employment placement, and then facilitation of or advice on business opportunities, and then subsidization or provisioning of public transport, pensions, housing, and burial support. The other priority promotion of military veterans' heritage as well as memorialization and honoring. In that regard, interventions to then recognize and appreciate the contributions of unsung heroes and heroines of our democracy, including but not limited to establishing the tomb of the unknown soldier. Secondly, restoration of graves of military veterans inside and outside of the Republic, and then establishing heroes and heroines acres, and then setting up an armed struggle leading memorial or museum, and then memorializing the first veterans, first volunteers of the Liberation War, and then also developing programs that will profile the military heritage vested within military veterans, especially those from the non-statutory forces, because that is an area that has been neglected in the past. In addition, provide opportunities to interface with the military veterans communities in the international arena, as well as domestically, and also sharing information with respect to military veterans with other social partners and stakeholders of military veterans. Furthermore, promoting empowerment programs for and of military veterans, and within this fiscal year, initiatives will be aggressively pursued to embrace the widening of access to economic participation of military veterans, and these will entail utilizing preferential procurement mechanisms within the DMV and other social partners, and then also operationalizing the establishment of the special purpose vehicles so as to provide an incubator program designated for military veterans. And then the next priority is strengthening governance and oversight protocols to give effect to the provisions of the Act. And in this regard, the Act, as you've seen in the diagrammatic representation, establishes the governance structures and institutions to provide advice to the executive authority on the delivery of services to the military veterans, specifically the Military Veterans Advisory Board and also the Military Veterans Appeal Board. And then furthermore, fast-tracking delivery of benefits as espoused in that Section 5 of the Act, and then in this regard, enabling the delivery of the mandate of the military veterans over the medium-term strategic framework, MTSF, and also towards the MTEC period, the Medium-Term Expenditure Committee, as well as strategic budgeting, to realize that resources essential for delivery of benefits as espoused in the Act are allocated, and then to build mechanisms to ensure that such delivery happens. Furthermore, empowering military veterans to enhance their contribution to reconciliation and nation building. In this regard, programs to enhance military veterans' participation in the nation's economic mainstream will be implemented. And to this end, programs will be negotiated for inclusion of military veterans in overall government socioeconomic development programs, including but not limited to rural development, as well as infrastructure development programs. In addition, providing opportunities to utilize military veterans to deepen social cohesion and nation building, entailing utilizing military veterans in rural development programs, as well as delivery on educational programs. Furthermore, developing, confirming, and deepening the skills base of military veterans. And during the medium-term expenditure framework period, we'll be undertaking an exploratory study to provide a skills profile of the military veterans so as to inform not only for ourselves as a department and the ministry the skills base of military veterans, but to ensure that it is also an integral part of the national skills base that we'll make input into. This process is already underway because as we update our database, we also in the process try and determine or establish what is the skills base of the military veterans as well as the educational background and so on. And then the implementation of a high-impact communication and marketing strategy and plan This seeks to profile the image of the military veterans as well as communicating developments regarding delivery in terms of what the Act pronounces, the Military Veterans Act 18 of 2011, and then maintaining the credibility and security of the National Military Veterans Database. As chairperson, honorable members, this is critical because a credible and a secure National Military Database is an instrument that we will use and are continuing to use to ensure that there is delivery on all of the benefits espoused in Section 5 of the Act. It will also enable us to be proactive in delivery and provisioning of such socio-economic support services, as well as ensuring and enhancing the credibility of that, so that we can also streamline with what other arms of government, whether it's national, provincial, and local, are also doing, as well as the non-government organizations and entities. Here on strategic budgeting, this gives substance to the details under other departments which within the Defense and Military Veterans Board 22. You'll recall that in the estimates of national expenditure, the Department of Military Veterans is falling under vote 22 of the, that is the vote of the Department of Defense and the Department of Military Veterans. They are all together under vote 22. We are in continued discussions with the National Treasury that in the next financial year, the Department of Military Veterans will have its own separate dedicated budget vote to it. Chair, on the budget and program structure of the Department of Military Veterans, the program names basically three, starting with the administration program, and then socio-economic support services, and then empowerment and stakeholder management services. And the purpose of the administration program is to provide that management strategic administrative services to the ministry, as well as overall management of the department. This is primarily the Office of the Director General, as well as the Corporate Services branch as well. And the sub-programs within that ministerial and departmental direction, the financial management, financial administration as well, and then internal audit and office administration. On the socio-economic services, the purpose of that is to create that environment in which military veterans and their dependents can lead a better life. And the sub-programs are that research and policy, health and well-being support, and beneficiary support. And then the third and last branch, empowerment and stakeholder management services. The purpose of that is the management and facilitating the implementation of military veterans empowerment and stakeholder management programs. And then the sub-programs, provincial office management, skills development, heritage, memorials, burial, and honor, military veterans. Now, this slide just shows only the selected performance indicators in terms of what is in the estimates of national expenditure chapter. And the indicators basically are the total number of deserving military veterans with access to dedicated counseling and support. Now, in terms of past three-year cycle, you'll see that is empty because we're not in existence and we're reporting in accordance with the template. But we'll zoom in on current as well as more particularly on the projection. In terms of that number of deserving, for 12-13, it's that 1,000 military veterans, and 13-14 financial year, 2,000 incrementally, 3,000 as well. And then on the number of deserving military veterans with access to transport per year, this has yet to be implemented, but the target for the 12-13 financial year is that 5,000, and 13-14, 10,000, and then 15,000 for 14-15. In terms of those deserving military veterans receiving pension per year, that is the financial year 12-13, the current one, 8,000, and then 13,000, and then 15,000 for the 14-15 financial year. Now, Chairperson, Honorable Members, these figures take into account those military veterans who are already receiving a pension or have applied for pension or have yet to apply for pension of what, one form or another, be it the special pension, be it the military pension, be it the war grant, and or the special pension. And most importantly, what we seek to do in the immediate future to develop a military veterans pension that is trying to consolidate the different pensions that are spread across. And then the total number of deserving military veterans with access to healthcare support services per year for the 12-13 financial year to target the 10,000, and then 13-14, 13,000, and 16,000 for 14-15. And then with respect to those with decent housing per year, and that in the socio-economic support services branch, for 12-13, 5,000, and then 13-14, 8 incrementally, and then 7,000. This is in partnership with the National Department of Human Settlements, as well as the Provincial Department of Human Settlements. And we are about to finalize a memorandum of understanding in that regard, as well as service level agreement. And then on the number of deserving military veterans receiving various support per year, also within the socio-economic support branch, the target is a minimum 50, and then 13, 14, 50, and then staying at a constant 14, 15, also at 50. And then on realization of memorials of military veterans, that is the number of heritage sites serviced, and then military veterans memorials, and then the honor of military veterans events, minimum 2, and then 13-14 increasing to 5, and then 14-15 to 9. And then deserving military veterans with access to training and skills development, 12-13, 75, and then 13-14, 300, and then 14-15, 500. And then the total number of private sector companies in partnership with the DMV within the branch empowerment and stakeholder relations for 12-13, the target is 10, and then 10, and then 10 also in 14-15, and that number may increase. And then in terms of programs approved by Cabinet and also gazetted, that mainly in the administration program, the projections are a minimum of 3 per financial year, starting with 2012-13, and then 2013-14, and 2014-15. Chair, on the program allocation per program administration, socio-economic support, and empowerment and stakeholder management, the last financial year, the global figure of the budget that was given was 45.3 million. In the financial year starting this month into 2014-15, we have been allocated 51 million for 2012-13, 50.9 million for 2013-14, and then 53 million for 2014-15. And that is for programs in the administration program dealing with compensation of employees. Similarly, socio-economic support, dealing also with compensation of employees, and then empowerment and stakeholder management programs, also dealing with those different areas. Now, these are just broken down. In certain areas, these figures are put together. For instance, if we're talking about land and buildings, it does not mean that the administration program will have its own land and buildings, or the socio-economic support will have that, or the empowerment and stakeholder. But it would be then one for such land and building for the department as a whole, but just broken down pro rata in terms of the structure of the department. So, Chair, further breakdown then in terms of the program, administration program, then for 2012-13, 18.6 million for 12-13, and then 13-14, 18.5, and then 19.6 million in 14-15. And then for the social economic support services branch, 21 million for the current financial year just started, and then 21 again, but with a slight decrease by a few thousands, 21.005, and then 22 in 2014-15. And then on empowerment and stakeholder management programs, 11.4 million for the current financial year, that is 2012-13, and then 11.3 for next 13-14, and then 12.029 for 2014-15. So those are the breakdowns of the 51.2 for the now financial year just started, 50 the next, 53 the 14 and 15. I should say that this do not include the delivery of benefits and services to military veterans. In terms of the strategic risks then that we have identified, firstly the financial resources, inadequate financial resources, human resources and infrastructure, which includes accommodation and IT systems. Just to speak on the infrastructure with respect to accommodation, the current facility that the Department of Military Veterans is housed in is definitely not sufficient for the department's running and operations. And we did indicate that already when we moved in, that it was a temporary measure where the department is currently residing, and the place noted in 2010, already April and May 2010, that we would need an office accommodation that would be able to take every one of the employees of the DMV. Secondly, a building or office accommodation that would be accessible to military veterans. That is already underway. The Department of Public Works has already made the undertaking, and we are hoping that by the end of at least next month or by June, we will at least have a building identified for accommodation of the Department of Military Veterans. And then in terms of monitoring and evaluation capability, the monitoring the effectiveness of military veterans programs, in this regard, even as we have highlighted it as a risk, we will be, during this financial year, looking at establishing a monitoring and an evaluation capability in the department so that over and above whatever oversight from the executive authority or from yourselves, the parliament, we are also able to monitor and evaluate the extent of the impact of our programs and how far and how much we are delivering on the programs of military veterans as approved in legislation and later in the regulation. And then the completeness and the integrity of information on the database, that we have flagged that it is absolutely critical that the integrity and the information on the database is complete, otherwise that would compromise service delivery. Compromise it in the sense that the services and benefits that we would deliver would not then go to bona fide military veterans. And then a further risk, lack of data regarding available skills. This is in process as a mitigating factor. We're dealing with that as an integral part of the updating of our database. And then, of course, the fact that the skills audit and the database are also absolutely critical. So those are instruments that we will be depending on as we roll out to the military veterans. Chairperson, the slide 15, which you should be familiar with as we dealt with it during the process of the bill, in terms of the financial implications of delivery on the provisions of the Act, and this mainly speaks to that provision which then invokes that Section 26. And primarily we've broken down the Section 5 benefits, and on that the second column, subsection 5.1, speaks to the specific benefit that is in the Act. healthcare. So HMA would then be speaking to pensions, and then the breakdown per financial year into the medium-term expenditure framework period. So A then, we put it as pension, but in the F, it actually speaks to compensation to military veterans who may have suffered sustained disabling injuries. So we put it together, H and A, as compensation, and that in year one, that is the implication of delivery on that. And then secondly, healthcare and counseling, that is in...
Sorry, yes. I suppose it's 120 veterans.
No, millions, it's money. Yes, apologies for not explaining that. These are figures in millions, not the number of. No, at the top we've indicated strategic budgeting risk, and then within that, hence we talk about total costs at the bottom. Total cost per financial year. We will make that more visible. But in terms of the actual numbers of military veterans, that is the extreme right column, which speaks to the number qualifying. And in year one, then for that 3,600 and so on. So that column.
The last one? The total?
No. The F. Under F, there are two columns.
Yeah.
There's one that says number qualifying.
Yeah.
That is the one which speaks to the actual numbers now, the warm bodies.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
That particular column.
That won't be my question.
Okay. Yes, sir.
The machine.
Again? I'm not sure about the figures, but I'm sure about the
policy and what is money. Thanks, Honorable Member, for flagging that. And then in terms of then the healthcare and counseling, in terms of provision I and B, and in the Act, B, of course, speaks to dedicated counseling and I, access to healthcare. So year one, then it's at 70 million and number qualifying, that 3,000. And then on G, which is the access to partially or fully subsidized public transport for military veterans, year one, those are the figures, 73 million, year two, 79, year three, 86. And then with respect to J, which is the benefit that speaks to housing, year one, minimum of 100, 200, and 300 as well. And then on honor and memorialization, that is speaking to 5.1c, that is in the Act, honoring and memorializing fallen military veterans. And the figure there, that is put 17 million, and it's put static for year one, year two, and year three. And then the number qualifying then at 200 military veterans as the minimum. And then on burial support, also, that speaks to honoring and memorializing fallen military veterans, as well as K in the 5.1K of burial of military, burial support for military veterans. And year one, 2 million, 2.2 year two, and then 2.4 year three, and the total being that, and the number qualifying at 200. And then eight, not seven, training and skills development. Speaking to D, that is education, training, and skills development of military veterans. That is 100 for year one, 100 for year two, and 100 for year three, and the total 300, and number qualifying at 5,000 of the military veterans. So the total cost then for year one stands 486 million, and then year two, 520.2, and then year three, 555 million, and then overall, then within the medium-term expenditure framework period, that is 1.5 billion. That is basically what is at the heart of the costing then of the delivery of the benefits to the military veterans. Now, sir, if you may proceed on the budget analysis and the economic classification, we have put the actual allocated budget and the shortfall. But on the shortfall, we've only indicated on the compensation of employees. That is with respect to also the total amount required to approve, to fund the approved full structure of the Department of Military Veterans. And that amount would be 63.7 million. But the allocated budget amounts to 16.7 million. So the shortfall there of that 47.2. And then the full cost for goods and services, we have not costed the shortfall, but in the actual allocated budget, it amounts to 33 million. And then on machinery and equipment, 1.7. Okay. If we may move on, sir. On the next slide, which then deals with the budget programs, and then within that also executive authority priorities for the medium term, and then funding status, as well as what our comments within that are, the socio-economic support services, what we have is then the provision of immediate social relief, as already indicated, that is the branch that will deliver on that. In terms of its funding status, it's partially funded. So the remarks that we'd like to make there are that insufficient funding for compensation of employees may cause delay in staffing the vacant post. And then also the other side of it, and more critical, the implementation of military veterans programs. And then further still on socioeconomic support services, subject to availability of resources, a comprehensive support services to military veterans. And this is partially funded. This speaks to also what we had identified as a risk, that the actual budget that has been allocated is not sufficient to ensure that the department will be fully operational, as well as providing all identified support services. On empowerment and stakeholder relations, the executive authority's priorities in the medium term are the promotion of military veterans' heritage, as well as memorialization and honoring, and that is partially funded. Socioeconomic support as well, maintaining the credibility and security of the National Military Veterans Database. This one is fully funded only in the immediate term. We will seek further funding in the outer year, that is outside of the current financial year. And critical is to ensure that credible information is contained on our database. And then empowerment programs for military veterans are funded. On administration, partially funded, that is strengthening governance and oversight protocols to give effect to the provisions of the Act, that is partially funded, and that speaks to the institutions that have been established to provide advice to the executive authority, those being the advisory board, military veterans advisory board, and also the Military Veterans Appeals Board. But also what the section of the Act speaks to in terms of the establishment of a National Military Veterans Association, that as well is not funded and has yet to happen. On the administration and socioeconomic support services, the immediate priority then is to first set the delivery of benefits as espoused in that Section 5, and that is partially funded. And then on empowerment and stakeholder relations, also to the priority on that is ensuring that military veterans enhance their contribution to reconciliation and nation building. That is fully funded. And then further still on empowerment and stakeholder relations, developing confirming and deepening the skills base of military veterans that is partially funded, but reflect the fact that the lack of funding for compensation of employees may also lead to lack of personnel to ensure that we fully implement this particular priority. And then lastly, on administration, implementing a high-impact communication and marketing strategy and plan that is only partially funded, and out of the costed 1 million, we can only put aside 500,000 to 600,000 for this purpose. Chairperson, we conclude thus on the integrated presentation, which covers the strategic plan of the Department of Military Veterans, as well as the annual performance plan of the Department of Military Veterans for the fiscal year 2012 and the strategic plan for the fiscal years 2012 to 16. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Member, you can now engage with the presentation. Honorable Member. Honorable Kondewald, Honorable Daniel, in that order.
Chair, I'd like to raise issues about the strategic budgeting. You will recall when our committee dealt with the Military Veterans Bill, one of the key points which we considered was the costing of the bill. We were told that the cost that the bill would the costing was set at 1.6 billion over the MTF, and I recall in our last meeting asking for a breakdown of how that figure had been arrived at. And we were, if I recall correctly, not provided with that breakdown. That seems to me to inevitably have got us into trouble, because if we look at the strategic budgeting, it seems to me, and I wonder if the DG could confirm it, that the costing was in respect of the benefits or projected benefits only, and did not factor in the cost of administration. My question is, we supported a bill based on a costing of 1.6 billion in the MTF. We were misled about the cost. How did we get to this point? That's the first point, Chair. The second point is, it seems in respect of administration that the minister or the deputy minister have approved a structure which they must have known was not budgeted for and could not be afforded. And that structure envisages, for example, 141 posts, provincial officers, and is already spending 2 million rand on officers SNL. Again, how did we get into this situation? So just succinctly, Chair, in respect of the costing, am I correct that administration was not factored into that costing, and that this committee was misled in respect of the costing? And two, am I correct that the minister or the deputy minister have approved a structure for the Department of Military Veterans that she knows has not been budgeted for and cannot be afforded?
Thank you, Chair. My question links up to the Honourable Mangere, Chair, because on page 15 or slide 15, excuse me, if I understand it correctly, and that's why I've asked for bodies and everything, I also understand, and I want to know whether I'm correct, that we're talking about 1.5 billion rand. That is for benefits only. And if you go to slide 13, if I understand it correctly, or help me if I'm wrong, if I look at the administration cost, we're talking about, for last year it was 45 million, 13 is going to be 51 million. Am I correct as far as that is concerned? And then, if I'm correct, then I also want to know, as far as I know, that there should be a means test to determine which military veterans qualify. You can be a military veteran according to the definition, but you can only quantify for benefits if you pass the means test. Now, I haven't seen that means test yet. We are making projections, and we're giving bodies numbers. How do we know how many bodies are we going to have if we don't have the means test? So what is the progress on that? Thirdly, Jefferson, I want to ask for clarity on many questions, but I'll stick with the three. You start with, I think it's on page, where is it now? Okay, page 8 or slide number 8. Promotion of military veterans, heritage as well as memorialization and honoring. You say the restoration of grace of the Liberation War military veterans. And then you say set up an armed struggle memorial and on the ship. So are we collective now that when we're talking about military veterans, it's only those went to the military veterans in the Liberation War and in the armed struggle? Now what about the other military veterans, which we thought it out when we accepted the bill, to say no. If you're a soldier, you're a soldier. When the war is over, we're all soldiers. But now we make distinctions between armed and struggle veterans and other veterans. I just want clarity on that. Thank you.
Thank you. I must say, this presentation has got a lot of holes in it. One chair, in page 8, the DG being the accounting officer of the department, on the second paragraph, that document says to provide subject, which is the operative word, subject, which then casts doubt over the whole budget. It says subject to availability of resources. How do you then arrive at the costing that you have arrived? Whilst we are saying subject to availability of resources. Because when you budget, you must know how much you have. In every financial year, you budget in terms of what you have in the kitty and escalate it in terms of every financial year as you budget. And you continue. Because then, noting that this is a public document, what they are giving to military veterans out there is saying they must lose hope. Because here we are talking about the implementation of the mandate of the Military Veterans Act. Something that is needed by yesterday. We know that the act has been enacted only in December. It is the quarter of the year already. But we are talking about people who have been looking forward to the implementation of this act. Now, in page 13, no, let me start at page 12. I'll take an example. We are talking there about the number of deserving military veterans receiving burial support per year. How do you determine? Or then are you saying to this committee that you can only bury 50 people that year? Any other person, he or she dies thereafter, you will not be able to bury. Of course, we're talking about deserving people. That is just an example, Chair. Is that what you are saying as a department? Then it goes back to what I said. You budget in terms of what you have, you have, and also when you budget. You cannot budget for 10 people when you know you are dealing with a community that is dependent on what you're supposed to, or the service that you're supposed to provide. The second one, Chair, I would like to understand what informs the prioritization of all these benefits. Are you going to be giving these benefits chronologically, or is just prudent that these are? And then my question would be, wouldn't there it be better to prioritize them in terms of the immediate needs? We know people die, we know people need health care, but there are basic principles of need. You have the three basic ones that are very urgent. Is that what informs the prioritization, or you just lay them out, knowing that is how you would? Then going to page 13, I need to understand that slide. They're talking about land and buildings, goods and services and all of that. And you were talking to the structure and the branches. And you've also alluded to the fact that all this stuff will be housed in one place. Now, what is the meaning of that slide if you're talking about land and buildings and costing them and all of those things? And yet you are talking about the structure that will be housed in one place, and surely the expenditure of all of those will be under one umbrella. To make a follow-up on that question, sometimes ago we were informed that the Department of Defense does still have, whether it's buildings, land, that it has not handed it over back to public works. That is still maintaining. Now, wouldn't it be advisable to use those? Because then you would not have to spend on those, because the defense is still maintaining those. But all you would have to look at is the structure and modernizing it and making it accessible to military veterans. Because what is key is that this budget must first focus to the beneficiaries. I will stop there for now, sir. Thank you.
Honorable Mukabadeli.
Thank you, Chair. My questions are just three. They are actually informed by the fact that, one, we cannot be creating villages of military veterans in isolation from the rest of us. Two, they are in line with the spirit of reconciliation and nation building. So the first question, I heard that somebody is coming from the research. According to the research, what is it saying about the poverty of the military veterans? Are they benefiting from the poverty alleviation programs of our government or not? If yes, which departments are really working on that? The second question is the skills transfer and skills exchange. We normally say that we are running short of skills in our country, and we know that the military veterans have been all over and they've been exposed to so many things and different knowledge. How far are we utilizing their skills? The last one is the multifaceted nature of the priority on page 8. I want to know who else is the department working with, because it demands a lot of other disciplines. I would like to know
so that really we can be sure that our department is reaching out to other departments and to other disciplines. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Abidji. Are you coming for the second round?
Yeah,
I'll come for the second round.
Thank you very much, Chair. The question by Honourable Member Mynheer in terms of the costing of the Act when we are going through it with Parliament and it's not having costed the administration. Would respond as follows, that when we came with the costing of the bill, the main focus was on the costing of delivery to military veterans. In particular, that Section 5, as amended several times until the committee eventually came to conclude on all of the benefits as now indicated in that Section 5.1. So that was the main focus. And in that regard, the department engaged actuarial services, professional, accredited, recognized actuarial services of two companies, Alexander Forbes and another one, PKX Capital, who then, in thorough engagement with the department, then came to the basis of costing per each of the benefits that had been indicated, and thereupon then indicated that those would be at least the figures for the medium term. Of course, initially it will be recalled that they had projected well into the future, and the figure was not as you now see. But with guidelines from National Treasury, we then got to the point of only focus on the medium term expenditure framework period, and that is what we have, as that rounded off 1.6 billion on the delivery of benefits and services. We had focused on the delivery of benefits only, primarily because on the side of the administration, there had been a budget allocated, even if it was not enough at that point. And then we had indicated that hence National Treasury then increased in the following financial year. In the first financial year of the existence of the Department of Military Veterans, an amount of 20 million was allocated. And in engagements with the National Treasury, the following financial year, that is 11-12, that is when you now had the 45 million that was then allocated. Primarily on the basis and spirit that the unfolding of the department would be something that will happen as a process. But even as we're engaging, we keep on, and even at that time, indicate what has been allocated, but what is the shortfall, assuming that, for instance, if we were to go on full strength, or 100% of the feet on the ground of the Department of Military Veterans. So the question that is indicated there in that slide of that 1.6 speaks to the benefit, and there was a basis of costing as assisted by the actuarial companies as well as the National Treasury. The committee was not, Honorable Chair, misled at all. Secondly, the issue that the Minister and the Deputy Minister respectively approved the structure that was not budgeted for. The understanding as a general principle in the public service is that the staffing and filling of posts is a process that happens on an incremental basis, taking into account what are the priority posts in the department, and then looking at what is the availability of resources. The structure as approved, and we are continuing to staff it now, we have identified those priority posts, and we also at the same time continue to engage with the National Treasury so that they are able to also have visibility on what we would then ultimately need as feet on the ground. Ideally, yes, we would like that by the end of this financial year, 2012-13, all our posts should be filled, not only at the national office, but more critically at the provincial offices, because there is a provision of that in the structure, that there would be provincial coordinators in the provinces that are on the staff of the Department of Ministry of Veterans. The question that Honourable Member Khurule was asked, whether the costing of the act was or is at 1.6 billion, yes, it's correct. It's the figure as indicated, the 1.6 billion is just rounding that off. And yes, that figure does exclude the administration. The issue of the means test, yes, the means test, even if we may not have mentioned it, but the matter of the means test is there in the legislation. And as we deliver services and benefits to military veterans, we are doing it on the basis of that. The actual tool of the means test will be presented to the committee when we present the regulations. And the regulations we are already developing, and we intend to present them at the earliest opportunity. We are in consultation with other line function departments because there are certain obligations that other line function departments have. For instance, if we are talking about housing, we cannot build houses as the Department of Military Veterans. But the statutorily allocated department, which is Human Settlement, does that. So that's why then we would then engage with them, which we are doing, in terms of then finalizing such agreements and the regulations in particular. Similarly with the other departments, Social Development, Rural Development Department, and so on. But we will bring the regulations as the committee had already instructed at the time that the Act was being passed, that we need to bring the regulations to the committee. Yes, it is preliminary. Let me put it this way. For instance, let me pick an example of housing. The Department of Human Settlement, in its own right, already has a minister.
That is important. I understand what you're doing. I want to come to the practical.
Yes.
Because people are calling me, and they're asking questions, and I have to give them answers. Now, I understand what you say. For instance, if you want to qualify for housing, you use the means test of the
Department
of Housing.
Which we will then tailor make for us.
But when it comes to pension?
No, when it comes to pension, it's in accordance with the existing legislative framework. But we are in discussions with the National Treasury, primarily the Government Employee Pension Fund, as well as in particular, the offices that deal with the military pensions and the special pension, and also the war grant, because there are different types of pensions. And we have already registered our intention that we will and should have, and that's a strong recommendation that we're making, that a consolidated military veterans pension. Because at the moment, the different types of pensions have different eligibility. So a military veteran, for instance, may receive a special pension but may not receive a military pension. Or a military veteran may be receiving a war grant but may not be receiving a special pension. Or even worse, a military veteran may not be receiving any single one of the pensions that are indicated for a variety of reasons. And that is why we are then pushing then that there needs to be an introduction of a military veterans pension. And the primary target would then be those military veterans who are not accessing any one of those pensions, whether non-statutory force pension, special pensions, military pensions, the war grant, even the general pension as indicated, like for old age or disability and so on. The other question, the last one from the Honorable Member Hrunewald, the promotion of military veterans' heritage as indicated in the priorities. Why only focusing on national security forces and so on? The premise is that the preservation of the military heritage of those armed forces that were in South Africa before 1994 is and has been recorded, honored, and memorialized in different ways, either by way of museum, either by way of memorialization, and certain processes and procedures that are in place. So the idea with this is to then level the playing field, to ensure that all of the military veteran formations in South Africa, particularly those whose military heritage has not been recorded or honored or recognized, is then recognized and brought on par. We don't even have to go far. Just down the road, the castle of Good Hope is a military heritage in itself, has been there for a number of years. And so on, you can go to various towns and cities. But what we intend to do, and as what you also approved in the policy framework on military veterans that was brought before Parliament, before we even went into the legislation, is the matter that all military veterans' heritage and memorialization must be recorded and so on. Some provinces have already started, and the reason we're specifically mentioning the military veterans leading the armed servant living history memorial because, for instance, the province of the Eastern Cape has already embarked on this on such a project. We are partnering with them to look at how we will further develop that. And that is part of, in the context of the matter of honor and memorialization of the military veterans' heritage, so that the country can benefit from the rich history that military veterans have. The question from Honorable Member Daniels on the provision to provide subject to availability of resources and of course, validly, how come when the costing was done and there was a budget for it? Yes, that provision is based on what National Treasury will then allocate. For instance, let me start on the other side of the administration. With the Minister of Public Service and Administration having approved the structure and establishment of the Department of Military Veterans, when it came to funding of that structure in its full totality, that was the matter that now for National Treasury to then allocate such resources. Hence, I was saying earlier that the first budget that we got was that 20 million, which even at that point was not enough for the full establishment of the structure, and also, more importantly, the delivery of the benefits. So that is why then there is that provision. But even having said that, we continue to discuss and engage with National Treasury to highlight that in terms of benefits in particular, there has not been an allocation that has been made to the Department of Military Veterans. So we are hoping that this year, in September, during the medium-term expenditure committee deliberation during the budget adjustments, that we would be able then to get an additional allocation on delivery of a budget for in terms of the prioritization of what has been indicated here, although we just put them as they are, the act as we had passed does call upon us to put a priority of the delivery of the services. In that regard, we have prioritized access to health care. And that is why, even before the bill became an act, there was already access to health care for military veterans since December 2010. And in fact, as we speak now, the initial access to health care, as authorized even before the act, was the military veterans of ages 60 and above and those who presented with chronic illnesses. But that has now since moved to access to health care for military veterans, all military veterans to have access to health care. And of course, again, the issue of the means test is also just as important. But that is already happening. And in fact, during this month and into May, we will be expanding on that to issue military veterans with the cards. Cards that would then for them to be able to access health care. Because the current system and process that we're using is on the basis of authorization, and then only then can a member go. But we are now going to do it the other way. On the basis of our database, to go out into the provinces and the regions to then issue such to military veterans on the ground. Starting this very week on Friday. So healthcare certainly is burials also. It may not be big, but there is already an implementation of assistance with burials for military veterans. We do receive such requests virtually every week, and we are setting in place proper and full systems of administration in that regard. And we will be communicating with the Military Veterans Association as well, directly. On the issue of land and buildings, what this talks to, I will ask a colleague who is corporate services to just explain that principle, what the land and buildings is, and why it's broken down into the three. But as I've said, it does not mean that each branch, as indicated, will have its own land and buildings. But if TDV Corporate Services could speak to that particular one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. When one talks to land and buildings, currently the Department of Military Veterans, as has been said by the Director General, is currently housed at the Tenel building. And I did hear the Honorable Member indicating why is it that they were not able to find existing land within the DOD, facilities that are there. As the DG had indicated earlier on, we needed to have proper access for our military veterans so that it becomes easier for them. And having done an exercise, we were not able to find any suitable building, which then led to a request that the National Public Works avail or to find us a building. That process has taken over 2 years, and as the DG has already indicated, hopefully this will be finalized by the end of May, as National Public Works has promised in writing. And then the Honorable Member had already indicated trying to establish what is goods and services. Goods and services in with respect to how it is appearing on slide number 13. Those are the requirements in terms of how we are supposed to just run the offices, being able to come down here to Cape Town, stationery, furniture, and all that. So it's just aggregated into the different branches, as is indicated there. As would go for land and buildings, but we'll just aggregate it because that's part and parcel of what if we do have a new building or as the current one is the rental agreements that we get into with the landlords through the National Department of Public Works. I'm hoping I'm clarifying that. Thank you.
I think there was one question from Honorable
Member trying to ask Do I understand it correctly?
Yeah.
If you look at the slide 13, I think that was the other moment of concern. What you are saying is that when you talk about the anti-voluntary administration system for 2012-2013 is going to cost 1.1 million rand. For socioeconomic support, 420,000. And for the empowerment part, it is going to be 723,000. Because the way you explain it to me and the way I understand it, that is actually what it is costing to have the offices for these three departments annually. Am I correct?
However, oh, sorry.
No, it's not three departments. It's just broken down. That's what it is.
But
yes.
For each department,
for
you allocated that amount.
No, for each
branch
aggregated of the total budget, the contribution per branch. For instance, if this is where the Department of Military Veterans is, where we're in now, it's 20 million. That is then broken down per branch, A, per number of total staff establishment, and then per branch. And then it's this aggregated, that 20 million, it's just spread between the two, but we'll still pay the 20 million that is required. I don't know if that is understandable.
You want to make it? If that is the case, you see, here on administration, you have 1.52 and then subsequently then you have all these other sections having their own fees which is separate from the 0.052, and then thereafter you don't have anything here that says what the DG is presenting to us now. Like, for instance, where it says that all the sections are occupying the same premises, however, each of the sections is paying rentals, either to administration or whatever. But what we are seeing here is a duplication, or, because the figures are not the same, an amount of rental that is paid by individual section of your department.
You
wanted to ask a question?
Yes.
Ask a question. Well, thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, the first one, I know it was probably not a prerequisite for any of your top managers, DG, to have been part of either statutory or non-statutory forces before. But can I check in the total number of your top managers, do you have people with military experience? Do you have people that have seen action? Do you have people that actually understand more than probably all of us in this house, in this room,
of course, with the exception of Honorable Daniels and Mlambo and others, the actual plight of our military veterans out there. The second one is the nine provincial health and wellness centers. If my arithmetic is not failing me, first financially I'm intending to start with the first one, the second financially you will do three, and the last financially you will do five. That adds up to nine, and that equals the number of our provinces. Will I be correct to assume that the nine will be spread throughout the provinces? I see your colleagues are nodding. You see, Chair, I don't mind to be controversial, but I'll have to say this. It has become a norm these days that things start in KZN, particularly in Kandla. Should we expect the first rollout to be in KZN, probably around Kandla, DG, as lots of other departments are doing these days? If no, what would be your criteria in rolling out these health and wellness centers? Which province will have the first bite of the cherry, and on which basis? If it's in Kandla, you don't need to explain, because it will be self-explanatory. But if it's other provinces, please explain to me. And the last question, Chair, to you. DG, you mentioned a figure of 70 for this financial year, and by the time we get to 2015-2016, it will be 300. I missed it on skills and on skills training. Were you saying you will be training 70 people, or you have budgeted 70 million? DG?
Follow up. Okay. Lambo will follow, Daniels will follow, and Honorable Mbanye will follow. Honorable Mkabadi.
Chair, I'm observing that there are follow ups now and other questions, but there are still answers that are not being provided, which were asked on the first call. I'm not clear what is the procession.
The first follow ups. We have the first follow ups. Maybe we should answer the first follow-up, DG, and then you'll comment. Ask the second follow-up.
No, Chairperson, Honorable Mkabate is saying there are questions that were not answered. Not follow-up. There are questions that were not answered on the first day.
No, fine. But still you have to answer the follow-up. There were follow-up statements. Yeah. Okay, DG, can you go on?
Chair, I think the other question was after heritage. Prioritization, we dealt with land and building. Oh, okay, there was the issue of the poverty alleviation problem that was raised, whether Ministry of Veterans are benefiting from poverty alleviation programs as delivered by government, other sectors of government. The answer is yes, they are. And in fact, we, from time to time, and we are now, that's part of the agreement that we're concluding with the Department of Social Development. We have made interventions with respect to that in terms of military veterans. In particular areas where this has been brought to us, and also where, in certain instances, some of those programs would have been stopped to be delivered to military veterans. We have then intervened with or to the social development for them to continue on that and not stop it. But I'll ask a colleague, Ms. Lancha, to expand further on that.
Thank you. In relation to the benefits handled within the socioeconomic support services branch, indeed the Department for Military Veterans at this point in time does not have capacity to ourselves deliver on all those benefits. However, as also in line with the Act, we have entered into discussions and have agreed to a very large extent with Service Delivery Department to say we will present to them on an annual basis a list of military veterans who qualify for housing, just as an example, and the different benefits. And based on that and the means test that we would have taken everybody through that to compile that particular list, based on that, then the department would provide services to those military veterans. However, in our discussions also with military veterans, with housing, we noted that they already have a list of military veterans that they have already given housing to prior to the department's existence up until now. What we then requested from them was that let's see your list and let's compare it with our database to see if indeed housing was given to military veterans. And in that context, indeed, we saw some of the military veterans who have been given houses being bona fide military veterans, but some people who had been classified as military veterans not actually coming up in terms of the database as military veterans. So those are the corrective actions that we also are able to put in place as we move forward with our discussions with different departments that provide socioeconomic support services to military veterans. So from that point of view, I was just trying to illustrate, Honourable Member, that indeed we work with the different departments that are service delivery mandated to provide benefits to military veterans.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I'm just going to deal with the issue of the extent to which military veteran skills are utilized. We, as indicated earlier in the database process, we are now beginning in earnest to collect comprehensive information in this regard. But we also at the same process, also trying to understand, we are going to conduct an action research type of study on military veterans, where we will learn to understand exactly what type of skills they have over and above what they would indicate a person would have a matric or form 5 or a degree and so forth. But there's also inherent skills within the military veterans community, which we are now conducting a study on. And another intervention also in that regard is the recognition of prior learning process that we are embarking on. We also have a Center for Advanced Training, which resides in the Department of Defense currently, but we are going to co-utilize it, and it is also in that regard that we'll be able to begin utilizing and understanding in depth the skills based exercise within the military veterans. And we are talking military veterans across board from all forces, because we do believe that the country does not exactly understand military veterans' skills generally. Another question, or two more questions I wanted to add on. In her examples, Honourable Daniels alluded to the issue of the numbers that are that you've prioritized. You, Honourable, made an example of 50 veterans to be buried. Just to indicate that for us, that was it's demand-driven. We've stated that upfront, but it's based on historic figures. If you look at the number of 50, we are looking at an average of about 5 military veterans per province, maybe with more in one or two provinces. However, we actually are going on a conservative figure, because the planning is that if we are providing comprehensive interventions to military veterans, we're providing health interventions, we are looking at a process of actually getting them employed, we then are hoping that that the number of military veterans that actually are destitute that require assistance, burial assistance, will also reduce. So we've just worked on those conservative figures. But another point raised by Honorable Daniels relates to the prioritization of benefits. I think if I'm correct, she was saying, why don't you prioritize the basic human needs such as housing? And the response in that is that we are looking at providing a comprehensive package. The priorities that we have are not listed in chronological order. The only one that is a top priority, which is sitting on top, incidentally, is that one of provision of immediate social relief of distress to the most destitute of the destitute. Otherwise, all the benefits as listed, there is no prioritization listed to them. It's just saying this is what we really have to provide. Another question was directed at the DG, and it relates to the extent to which senior management in the department represents and understands the plight of military veterans. I'm not sure if I should answer that, or we actually leave it for the DG to answer, because it is for DG's senior management. But, maybe DG, should I answer? Okay. We'll leave it to the DG.
The question from Honorable Nana, the answer is affirmative. The composition of the top management of the Department of Military Veterans does have personnel that has military experience, but also understanding the plight of needs of military veterans. But it's not necessarily all or the totality of the composition of the Department of Military Veterans that is made up of personnel that may have seen or have exposure to action or having been in one armed formation or another. But however, in terms of understanding the plight and needs of the military veterans, that is absolutely critical, and that is so with respect to its composition. In terms of the provincial coordinators, the answer is yes. In the structure, the construct is that each province will have a provincial coordinator, and within that there would also be regional coordinators reporting to the provincial coordinator, and then also working with the provincial government and different departments in the province, as well as the community of military veterans, individually or collectively in their different formations. On whether the
the question whether or not we starting with the one health care and wellness center, where exactly we are starting out with that one. We chose already in Gauteng, not very far from the department's premises, is a health and welfare center that is run by an NGO has been limping along for military veterans, that has been limping along for quite a while. We are looking at acquiring that. We're still in negotiations with the relevant NGO. We're looking at acquiring that particular facility and learn from it. Because it is close to the department, learn from it in terms of how we will proceed as a department moving, rolling out this process in all the other provinces. But yes, it is starting in Gauteng at this point in time.
So the basis is that it's closer in terms of from to the department?
It's in existence, so we thought it is a good place for us to learn from it in terms of what we want to roll out when we go into provinces with a healthcare and wellness center.
Chair, can I plead for your indulgence in this regard? Sir, when you say you want to learn from them, do you suggest that you actually do not know what you are doing we are still to learn about it.
No, that's not what we mean. But what we mean is that, you know, when planning in terms of planning for implementation is different from actually implementing what you have planned for. And we believe that we need to gain experience in terms of implementing that plan and to see how we need to refine, if anything needs to be refined moving forward, to ensure that now we roll out a product or a process that we are confident is going to achieve what we hope it should achieve countrywide.
Chairperson, quite clearly, the lady suggests that they don't know what they're doing, and I will rest my case pretty soon. But can I say this? My first question, Chair, related to the number of people in the department that essentially understand the urgency and the plight of these military veterans. And I linked it with the criteria that would be used in rolling out the health and wellness centers. I was raising that, Chairperson, because I understand the urgency of such centers. And if as trusted leaders of the department, you will start to dilly-dally. I'm looking for a better word, Chair. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be insensitive or insulting. If you start to, you know, not to be sure about what you're doing, for me, it sounds some jitters. I don't like it at all, Chair. I honestly don't like it. And I wish that to be placed on record. I don't like it.
Thank you, Honorable. Honorable members, we are about to run out of time. Can we have a last round? Honorable Mlambo, Honorable Daniel, Honorable Munyea, Honorable Cronenberg. In that order.
Thank you, Chair. Actually, it was going to be a follow-up kind of a question. Not the second bite or the second bite. It is in relation with the accommodation. I heard what the DG has said on slide 14. He spoke about the on inadequate finance resources, human resources, and infrastructure. But I'm asking a question on what he raised, especially in terms of accommodation. I did not understand what he meant when he said it should be accessible to military veterans. So my question will be, where they are housed now, are they accessible to military veterans? And what is it that he meant when he spoke about that? Because here we are talking about a new department which has not even advertised itself to the very needy of military veterans. Is the building that they are occupying, the Dinel building, central to all needy and destitute kind of military veterans, and do they know where they are? Have they made some kind of advertisement as to how and where they can be reached? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to start with a question that was attempted to be answered, the ones of the means test. Yes, we were told that was done by the three companies, the general means test was done. But I think the question, maybe I understood it differently, but my question is that the practical operation of the means test. For you to be able to go out there and say, when this member requests
a service, you will be able to say no, based on this information, and ascertain, have you costed that? The practical means test of an individual now. Because the bigger picture we have dealt with, I understand that. The general means test was done, but these are the needs of the interpreter. But when you have to go on the ground and make sure when an individual requests a service, you are able to say yes, no, based on this information. Have you costed that? Because then it will need that the department must go out there and be able to do that. Because remember, we're dealing with destitute military veterans. The large number of those, in fact. That is one chair. Now, chair, noting that the Department of Defense, I'm talking defense, I'm not going to military veterans yet, it's a national department. Now, you are talking about coordinators in the province. This is a government. This is a department of government. How are these provincial coordinators going to relate with other government departments in the province and in the locality? Because that is very important. Because I don't see why, as a department, you should have extra expenditures while you have government departments in the province and in the localities. Have you thought about that? And how are you then going to synergize that? Because it is very important that because they lay out and the geographical spread of the provinces is different. When you talk central in other provinces, you are talking kilometers and kilometers. While you are talking central, you are still talking vast kilometers in other provinces. Now, here we are supposed to be talking accessibility. That becomes important. The other one here is, have you perhaps thought of halfway houses? In the interim, you have military veterans that are living under bridges and whatever else you can think of. Have you thought about that? You have, again, I'm going back to public works. In the provinces, I think in the 9 provinces, the Department of Defense does have some kind of an establishment. Some of those provinces are not using it. Have you thought of halfway houses that these military veterans can use? I'm not in any way suggesting that we create now villages or anything, but I'm talking in the interim. Because remember, what we're talking about here is something that is needed yesterday. And I think the last one here, the last one is, upon a military veteran, upon a military veteran making a request, what do you envisage will be the time frame for that to be implemented? And lastly, we need to also to remember that, yes, there's this community of military veterans, but by large are needy. But you also have military veterans that don't necessarily need to be detained. Now, I have not heard anything about those. The other day we had a defense review. That did not even incorporate or begin even to talk about military veterans. We're talking about the Department of Defense and military veterans. Remember, these are the people who have contributed in the dispensation that we are talking to today. And of course, those people should be talking about the stability and security of this country. They could impact on how that we maintain peace and stability in this country. We are not only talking about people who are only dependent, across this table, across the board, we are talking about military veterans. I think they can impact and effect on the security of this country. Have you thought about that? What are you going to do about that? And how are you going to go about making sure that we don't only look at as military veterans, as invalid community, but as people who can also contribute to the benefit and the betterment of this country. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I have one comment and two questions. The one comment is in respect of the costing. I don't think we need to belabor the point, but the exercise of costing the bill was to cost the implementation of the bill. The fact that administration was not included in that costing, I think, is a major problem and does amount to the department misleading this committee. But let's leave that aside. Chair, we are dealing here ultimately with a strategic plan, and so we do need to look at what kind of performance indicators there are and what kinds of performance data will be gathered by the department. Now, I would think that one of the difficulties the department are going to have going forward, largely as a result of the deputy minister's interventions while we were deliberating on the bill, is the whole question of fairness. As a result of the deputy minister's statements during deliberations, a public perception was created that the purpose of this department is not to deliver to military veterans, but to deliver to some military veterans. Now, I'm quite certain that is not your intention. But it will mean going forward, in my view, that your performance information is going to, in respect of benefits received, is not only going to have to be broken down into total number of beneficiaries, but it is going to have to be broken down into total number of beneficiaries per former formation, so that your department can clearly show that you are delivering services to military veterans, not just military veterans of one particular formation. I think that I'd be interested if indeed it is your intention to gather performance information by formation per benefit. That's, then, Chair, just when I am concerned about the cost of administration, I think our committee must concede. The Department of Military Veterans has recently been set up. A bill has recently been passed, and so we are spending more money on administration than we are spending on benefits. That will change in forthcoming financial year. But I am worried about cost of administration. I wondered in respect of two points. Has in your post structure and in your budget under administration, have you already budgeted for provincial offices in 9 provinces? So of the 141 posts you've allocated, have you allocated people to provincial offices, and have you costed those provincial offices under administration? And finally, I mean, for example, one of the visions is the department might have standalone health care facilities. Has that been budgeted? I think cost of administration is something we're going to have to be quite careful of. Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I have to just apologize to the DG and to yourself. I cannot stay. I have a lunch which I must attend, but I will look in the minutes to see the response, and I do sincerely apologize.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'm going to have a question. Why do I want to say, Chair? I want to come to the practical matter.
Can you press your mic, Honorable Khulafati?
Can you hear me now? That's right. I want to come to the practical situation. I mean, we have different, actually, bases and centers where people can go and register. That is what is happening. Now, once a person has registered, what happens then? Because I'm receiving the calls. Now, I understand, like it's already been said, we're still waiting for the means test, but in the meantime, when it comes to housing or anything like that, we're using the existing department's means test. Now I want to know, how many bodies have been registered at this moment? What do we know? How many bodies? And how many of those people has been accommodated in any sense, whether it's health services? Because if I understand it correctly, when it comes to the health services, actually anyone qualifies for that. Is there also a means test for that? Right. I'd like to know how many then qualified for the present means tests, different tests. Lastly, I'd like to know, why are we waiting so long for the means test according to the regulations to get onto the table? Thank you, Chair.
DJ, this will be your last opportunity to respond.
Thank you very much. Just to start with the question raised by Honorable Mlambo on office accommodation and what it means in terms of accessibility. Chair, just to say by way of background that when the department was established, we had then moved to our current premises, and that was exactly 2 years now, exactly 2 years. But at that time, we had indicated that was a temporary measure. We had moved in because it was the first available, and we had said that we would want to be there for a maximum period of 1 year. And that was the agreement. At the same time, there was engagement with the National Department of Public Works to already start the process to look for a building stroke, a facility for us that would take the entire staff establishment of the Department of Military Veterans, with guidelines about access in terms of the reach of the building, but also access in the building itself in terms of our client base with disability, occupational health and safety access building type. So all of those guidelines were then given. Unfortunately, we experienced a significant delay in the Department of Public Works coming to the party with us on this. And it is only now that we are hoping by the end of next month we'll have a firm indication of where have they now found an appropriate building for us. But we have been engaging with them as well as with the Department of Defense in this regard. But be that as it may, that office would not be the only point of access. Once we establish the provincial offices, those would also be areas of access for military veterans in the provinces. And then thereafter, the next phase in the region, which then answers the concern that Honorable Member Daniel said, that, for instance, a center in a province can be very far from reach. So that is why we then said it's better to then, in addition to provincial offices, have regional offices, so that if a province has got 6 regions, to then, in addition to the provincial coordinator in each of the regions, to then have a presence. But then in that process, to also prioritize on the basis of an area of highest concentration. For instance, if we say Eastern Cape, we cannot prioritize one region over another when the most concentration is in a particular region. And I don't want to mention names of regions. Similarly, with Gauteng or any other of the provinces that we are talking about. So that is going to be the next phase once we have the provincial coordinators in place. And in that regard also, we are in discussion with provincial governments in terms of what form or what model then should be in place and what kind of collaboration and what should be the expectations between us and the provincial government. Because the reality is that provincial governments are already doing something or other with respect to military veterans, but we need to coordinate and synchronize that and also know that as they are delivering or whatever programs that they want to put in place, it is indeed to genuine bona fide and military veterans. For instance, Gauteng, the Premier's office has delegated the function of dealing with issues of military veterans to the MEC for Sports and Recreation and that department to do coordination in the province. KZN, it is the Premier's office, and we actually had a meeting with the Premier's office just this last week on Friday, and so on. So it's different models that they have in terms of what the leadership administrative in the province has then determined how issues of military veterans will be dealt with. On the matter of, and of course this is part of the synergies, but over and above the provinces, we're also engaging with the municipalities to see what kind of programs they have. Some municipalities do already have in place programs and engagements for military veterans, whether indigenous military veterans or just generally the delivery of services to military veterans. I'll ask the colleague Ms. Rantler to deal with the issue of the destitute, halfway houses for the destitute, and what we're doing in specific rates that we're doing.
Thank you, JG. Thanks, Chairperson. And just to say, in response to the suggestion of halfway houses as an interim measure, indeed we felt we needed an interim measure to ensure that where military veterans do need crisis intervention in that context, we are able to assist. And in that connection, we spoke to the Department of Social Development, which has centers, welfare centers throughout the country, and the agreement with them is that when we do present a list of names of military veterans who need such assistance in the interim, they will then be able to assist us in that context. But also the other question, Honorable Daniel, that you raised was whether or not the Department of Military Veterans is able to visit military veterans where the need arises. Yes, we are able to do that. We've done that in many instances. For instance, we've been to the Eastern Cape, the Northwest, and several townships around the Gauteng area, especially where military veterans are not able to come to the office in terms of what they need. We are amenable, and we have always been saying to military veterans organizations, where our military veterans are not able to come to the offices, just give us a call. It is our responsibility to then go and meet with military veterans and see how best we can assist.
You done? You answered all the questions. How can you deal with them quickly?
The one I'm coming on is actually the one which was asked by Honorable Daniel.
So you suggest that she must not go? No, we'll listen for her.
She asked about the recognition of veterans as people that could also contribute to the country. And to reiterate that actually what you meant earlier on about empowering them to contribute on a nation building program tells exactly that. We didn't make an example on their astuteness on security matters, but that's also one of the examples. Another one could be, in fact, if you now take veterans across board, they have a repository of all skills in the entire country. And when I say veterans across board, I'm talking NSF, statutory forces, and what we were beginning to discuss with other departments is to say, how do we group all these veterans so that they could contribute? Military, for instance, has got engineers that are building bridges in other countries and so forth, and those veterans could also be utilized for rural development programs in South Africa. They've got a broad understanding of languages, and those they could be utilized within home affairs and so forth. So the point of saying that is exactly what we meant. We just didn't make an example of security. But within the defense review process, it may not have been mentioned here, but actually that's one of the considerations to say veterans also, there are different areas. One is to look at their needs as destitute veterans, but on the other hand, it is how veterans could be utilized for betterment of this country. That was just a very short response.
DG, thank you very much. Do you answer all the questions? Oh, welcome to you now.
Yeah, quickly then, Chair, cognizant of time, the question by Honorable Member Kuhn was about the different database registration centers and what happens after this process. Firstly, to indicate that with the first phase of the database registration, we have captured just over 11,000 with that exercise that concluded on the 14th of December 2011. We are going on a second phase in 2012, beginning in May, 7th of May until 30th of June, and we will be publicizing that so that the military veterans can be able to access those points. We have actually had several workshops with the provinces and the formations of military veterans since the last exercise because they indicated certain gaps in the execution of that particular exercise, some of which were issues of access to the registration point and different ways or better ways in which we could have done that. We have taken all of those proposals on board and we'll be looking at how we're going to refine them as we go into the second phase. Now, in terms of what happens, where there is a need for a delivery of a service, what the military veteran makes the approval. For instance, let me take an issue of healthcare. Upon a request being received, we simply check on the database that we have that indeed this is a bona fide military veteran, and from there on we issue authorization for them to access a point of healthcare. And we are using, as we had indicated earlier, the South African Military Health Services footprint that is throughout the country to do that. The three military hospitals, as well as the sick base in the smaller areas. The SAMS has indicated that they are going to, on their own steam anyway, be expanding and strengthening their footprint in areas where they don't have a presence for members of the Defence Force. So for the military veterans, we are also going to be piggybacking on that. And hence also the process of the issuing of a medical card is also a critical thing for us because at the moment all we have is then only the letter of authorization that we then do for a member who comes forward or is brought to our attention by anybody, whether MPs or their organization or themselves even. And then we process them accordingly for them to be able to access that.
Can I ask you to request forward, and it's actually to help the department, because I think my colleagues also experience inquiries from the people. Can we just get a short list, for instance, the means test? Pension for age pension, I think it's 60 or 65, and for instance, the income less than 65,000, I don't know. Can we just get a short list from the department to all the members of the committee for each and every benefit? What is your test for that? So that if somebody phones us, we can say, listen, this is a situation. Yes, you can apply whatever the situation may be. Let me receive it, say, by the end of next week, please. If the other colleagues agree with that.
DJ, will you be able to provide that?
Yes, sir, we can be able to do that.
That's fine. Thank you very much, DG and the team. You do not should not forget your earring down the DG. Your earring is there. Honorable members, thank you very much. The committee will write an important recommendation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.